Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Hurricane Irene may have inspired some music making this past weekend, as we heard, but it also shut down virtually every large-scale music event on the Eastern Seaboard, including two of the 3 days of this guy, Dave Matthews, Caravan Tour on Governor's Island. And that may have been disappointing for fans, but concert promoters were playing it safe, as well they might, after a run of stage collapses earlier this summer, two of which resulted in 12 deaths. In a moment, we'll talk with an event consultant about safety regulations, or lack thereof, at summer concerts. But first, I'm joined by Indianapolis Star reporter Heather Gillers, who's been covering the fatal Indiana State Fair stage collapse since it happened earlier this month. Heather, thanks for joining us on Soundcheck today.
Thanks for having me.
So what role, if any, did weather play in the Indiana State Fair incident?
It played a large role. What caused the stage to collapse was a 60-mile gust of wind that came before a thunderstorm.
And was there any warning that there was a storm on the way?
We found that there was. The state officials have characterized the collapse as a freakish incident and sort of as unforeseen, but we found that there actually had been warnings going on since Thursday morning. This is myself, fellow reporters Tim Evans and John Russell. We found that the National Weather Service had warned of a possible severe thunderstorm event, or advised that there might be a possible severe thunderstorm event beginning Thursday morning at 5:57 p.m. on Saturday night, which was when the stage, which was the night of the stage collapse. There was a severe thunderstorm watch. And then at 8:39, there was a severe thunderstorm warning, which is the most serious caution that the National Weather Service can put out.
I guess the question then is, the National Weather Service is on the case, but was anyone at the Indiana State Fair monitoring them?
The state fair officials and the state police were actually in constant communication with the National Weather Service. And one of the questions that we've raised and that others have raised in the aftermath of this tragedy is why the state fair officials and state police didn't react more quickly to those warnings. After the 8:39 severe thunderstorm warning, which carries with it a recommendation to evacuate and seek shelter immediately, state fair officials and state police did not evacuate the audience. Instead, they waited about 6 minutes, then sent an announcer out on stage to announce that the show would go on. And 4 minutes after that, the stage collapsed.
I know. This was Saturday, August 13th?
That's right.
At the Indiana State Fair. Were musicians actually, first of all, was it a stage collapse?
What actually collapsed was the rigging, the metal structure on top of the stage. So it's about 60 feet high towers with a metal kind of roof covered by a canopy at the top, and then hooked up to these towers are speakers and lights. It's been estimated that it was about 50,000 pounds worth of equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And this structure, which kind of towers 60 feet up from the stage, that's what collapsed into the audience.
And how many people were hurt and killed in that collapse?
Four people were killed immediately. Three people have since died in the hospital, and more than 40 people were injured.
And were the musicians on stage? This was Sugarland was the headliner at,
yes,
at this point.
Yes, Sugarland was about to go on. So the opening act had finished, and Sugarland was about to go on. And actually, they were scheduled to be on stage, but their stage manager, right a minute or so before the stage collapse, looked at the sky and decided to hold them backstage, which may have saved their lives.
Hmm. We're speaking with Heather Gillers, a reporter for the Indianapolis Star. On August 13th at the Indiana State Fair, Sugarland was about to go on stage when their rigging and trusses and equipment all collapsed into the crowd. You said, Heather, it was a 60-mile-per-hour wind gust?
That's right. That's what the National Weather Service has measured it.
Now, you know, it might be easy to say, well, you know, these people are putting on a for-profit event. They're under pressure to the show must go on or they don't make money. So but you said the state police also were aware of the warnings and also didn't evacuate. Has anybody sort of questioned them as to their decision making?
There are several investigations going on now into the chain of events that led up to the collapse. Initially, the state was going to do its own investigation of the state fair and the state police, but that met with a lot of criticism. And the
from whom?
My paper's editorial page, for one. Public citizens, also, people just felt that it posed a conflict of interest for the state to be investigating the state fair and the state police to be investigating themselves. Since then, the state has hired two independent firms, one headed by former President Clinton's former emergency management director, another one that participated in the investigation of the World Trade Center.
Mm-hmm. And is there talk now of lawsuits?
There are lawsuits. At least four of the dead people's families have filed lawsuits. There's also a class action lawsuit from concertgoers claiming they suffered emotional trauma.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how far that one's going to get, but I would say that I was at the state fairgrounds about an hour and a half after the collapse, and the people I interviewed who had been at the concert seemed really traumatized. And another reporter talked to someone who had seen a body severed. So,
yeah. Now, what about the musicians? What about the two members of Sugarland? What was their response?
They've highlighted the incredible heroism of some of the other concert goers who really rushed to lift pieces of equipment off injured people. There was a huge effort by the people who were not injured to help out. Doctors and nurses in the audience came forward, and that's something that Sugarland has really tried to highlight.
Mm-hmm. In fact, there's a striking picture of one of these enormous pieces of metal rigging, almost like planting the flag at Iwo Jima. It's like dozens of arms raising this heavy metal contraption up in the air in an attempt to enable people underneath to either get out or to let other people get in and pull people out. So obviously there were people there whose first response was to act as de facto first responders. And the band Sugarland, who were ready to take the stage at the Indiana State Fair just before this collapse on August 13th, canceled their show the next day at the Iowa State Fair, and they've directed their fans to donate to several related remembrance funds through their website. We've been speaking with Heather Gillers, reporter for the Indianapolis Star. Heather, thanks very much for bringing us up to speed on this.
Thanks for having me.
And this is the band Sugarland, and a cut from their 2010 release, The Incredible Machine. And now joining me by phone from Portland, Oregon, is Jacob Warwick. He's the owner of a company called Event Safety Consultants. Jacob, thanks for joining us on Soundcheck today.
Pleasure to be here, John.
You've worked in the concert industry for many years. Have you ever seen a run of events? I mean, we were talking about the Indiana State Fair. That's like one of four major collapses that we've seen just this summer.
No. Honestly, what has happened this past summer is exceptional, and it does give everyone within the industry pause as to what might be happening regarding this run of stage collapses. Four in a month and a half is really unheard of. We've had a tremendously good safety record regarding infrastructure safety to date, so to have such a rapid succession of accidents is really cause for assessment.
Okay, now July 17th, the Ottawa Blues Fest, a thunderstorm, the roof fell onto the stage during Cheap Trick's performance. August 7th, Tulsa, Oklahoma, 80 mile per hour winds blew the Flaming Lips video screen off the back of their stage, narrowly missing a member of the band. We talked about August 13th, the Indiana State Fair, and then August 18th, the Pukkelpop Music Festival in Belgium. During a storm, three tents collapsed and killed five people. You do event safety. I mean, that's the name of your company, Event Safety Consultants. Is that mostly with concert promoters and presenters that you're working?
It actually runs, there are ultimately a number of different areas. I mean, there are street festivals, there are concerts, there are large marketing and promotional events. Anything where you're going to have a large number of people and a large on-site presence, it is my role to provide consulting services to the producers of those events to be sure that they're doing everything possible to create and maintain a safe event.
And is this sort of, you know, de rigueur? Is this the sort of conventional way of putting on an outdoor concert, or are there lots of concert presenters who just kind of go it alone and hope for the best?
Well, I think it depends on the size of the organization. I mean, you have a lot of established concert promoters that have such a large infrastructure of people, large amount of people working for them with plenty of experience, where they feel confident in kind of establishing their own safety guidelines and in running their own operations.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of what I do, I've been requested by more smaller and mid-sized organizations where, you know, they feel very confident in their ability to actually, you know, design a show and to know what they need, but they don't know the first thing about, well, how do we pull this off safely? How do we, you know, how do we account for our staging safety or our crowd management or, you know, even something like traffic control?
Right. But aren't there guidelines? Aren't there, they probably vary from state to state, but aren't there regulations, legal guidelines that you have to follow?
It depends upon the jurisdiction. I mean, you have some jurisdictions have very strong processes and requirements in order to put on an event. Take City of Chicago, for example, who has been doing outdoor events for a very long time. To do an event there, especially when requiring large infrastructure such as staging mm-hmm. or tents, they treat it as they would an actual building going up. You need to submit site plans. You need to get them approved, pull your permits, and everything needs to be inspected before you can even open the doors. If you go to a smaller jurisdiction where they haven't done this much, you know, they may have no requirements.
Have you worked in New York? How would you rank guidelines here?
I have not worked in New York. I have worked in Chicago, but I have not worked in New York.
Okay. So. What are we talking about here? Is it, I mean, the Indiana State Fair, it was a concrete stage. That didn't collapse, but all the metal superstructure that held the heavy speakers and the heavy lighting fixtures, that's what fell down. You know, do we have different rules for stages, outdoor stages of different types, different constructions?
Well, there are, all staging has established capacities. Well, the manufacturer will detail out what the capacity is for that staging. And there's an organization, industry trade group called PLASA, or the Performance Lighting and Sound Association, that has really been at the forefront of establishing guidelines for the manufacture and use of staging, such as your trussing and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But that will vary. And I think the larger issue isn't even necessarily the equipment itself. It's how the equipment is being used. Are the promoters using the equipment the way it has been intended to be used? Are they being mindful of the capacities? Are they installing it correctly?
And are you getting any sense that in any of these four recent collapses that misuse was a factor? Were people putting too much on these superstructures?
You know, and that's very difficult to say. And as I heard Heather speaking in the segment before here, there are investigations ongoing regarding that. Until they really figure out what truly happened regarding this collapse, it's difficult to speak towards that.
Okay. Jacob Warrick's on the line with us. He's the owner of Event Safety Consultants in Portland, Oregon. And Jacob, you mentioned, you know, the PLASA, the union, the people who do the sound and the lighting and stuff like that for these performing arts events. Joining us on the line, calling in, is Erica, who is a union stagehand. Erica, thanks for calling in. What's your opinion on this?
Well, I do a lot of rock and roll stage building. I do it out in the New York area, and I have to say, I have noticed lately that it's really a question of, as you said earlier, being overweight on equipment or misuse of equipment. Frequently, the structures I work with are much bigger and much, much, much better rated for that kind of weather. I'm concerned about the promoters, you know, putting forth that kind of equipment because of money saving.
And what's the reaction among your crew, the stagehands, the people actually building this stuff?
The stagehands in my union local are absolutely horrified at the number of collapses in the last 6 months. We are free because we work, as I said, we work doing this.
And are there guidelines that here in New York, strict guidelines that should be, you know, kind of making sure that everything is done according to code, that it's safe, that, you know, we don't have to worry about this sort of thing?
Well, there is more of a push now to treat this as a construction industry issue because this is, in fact, temporary construction. Things are getting more stringent,
yeah.
I will say. The rules are getting more stringent. We are adhering much more to safety concerns. Climbers like myself cannot climb without safety equipment, without safety gear, without fall arresters to keep us from falling should we slip while we're climbing.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of that is really being pushed now in the New York area.
Well, that sounds great. I mean, that sounds like it should be more than just the New York area. Jacob, do you run into those sorts of guidelines enough?
You know what? I do, and I'm glad that I do. I truly believe that maintaining a safe event and using safe work practices should be just an absolute requirement. I don't think it matters at all what the size of your actual event is. I think New York is very good that they're requiring that much. I think that most jurisdictions should.
Yeah. All right, Erica, thank you for calling in. Jacob, I have a final question for you. What's our takeaway from this? What will the lingering impact of this terrible coincidence of four stage collapses in a month and a half do to the concert industry?
Well, I think what you're going to see is after the festival season kind of winds down here, you're really going to have a lot of promoters step back and do a complete assessment of their operations. I think they're going to look at their stage selection. They're going to look at their emergency plans. They're going to look at their staff training. And hopefully they will assess these plans and make the recommendations to accommodate for this new reality of extreme weather and heavier equipment.
All right, well, we'll see what happens. But in the meantime, it's been a difficult month and a half for the summer concert industry. Four collapses in the space of just over 6 weeks. Jacob Warwick is the owner of Event Safety Consultants in Portland, Oregon. Jacob, thanks for spending some time with us on Soundcheck today.
Thank you, John.
We mentioned August 7th, Tulsa, Oklahoma, when the Flaming Lips video screen blew off the back of their stage, narrowly missing a member of the band. This is the band Flaming Lips. And still to come, singer-songwriter Anna Egge joins us for a live performance up next. And speaking of live performances, join us in the Green Space on Monday, September 19th for a special Soundcheck evening session with the Jayhawks. The alt-country icons are set to release their first album in 8 years. It's called Mockingbird Time, and it features the band's original songwriting duo, Gary Louris and Mark Olson. The Jayhawks play a special radio set in the Green Space, which we'll be taping for an upcoming episode of Soundcheck, and you can be there with us on Monday evening, September 19th, 6 p.m. with the Jayhawks. You can get your tickets at wnyc.org/thegreenspace.